Sean Patrick Maloney, the Pope is coming. It's causing a lot of excitement in this country. What do you make of it?
Oh, I think it's good, and I think it's really important to have a moral voice in our politics. I mean, we believe in the separation of church and state in this country, and that's very important. But it doesn't mean we don't care about moral issues, and it doesn't mean we don't need to be reminded sometimes about things that are lasting and eternal. I'm really looking forward to it.
So talk to me a little bit about the refugees that we now face and see around the world. A lot of people are pointing fingers at everybody else. We have 12 million people here who are undocumented that we know of or we think we know of. Do they count? There are people looking at the United States and saying, you should take more Syrians in. And if we do take a lot of Syrians in, will that change our own contemporary politics, for example, towards Israel? I don't know.
Well, look, we have, I would break those issues into two parts. The first issue of illegal immigration into the United States is a very serious one. And we need to fix a broken system. We can do that with some common sense legislation that will make people get right with the law, pay their debt, get in the back of the line, and get them into a legal process that's fair to the people who tried to do it the right way, and that's also realistic, and that recognizes that millions of folks who are here who did not arrive legally are nonetheless working hard, paying taxes, can help us grow our economy, grow our population. There's a lot of reasons why we need to do immigration reform, particularly for our farmers who need the labor and for our high-tech industries that needs certain high-skilled workers from around the world. So we are long overdue fixing a broken immigration system. When you look at a refugee problem, particularly like the one going on as a result of the conflict in Syria, you know, there you're not really talking about illegal immigration so much as you're talking about, for us anyway, you're talking about, are we going to be part of a humanitarian effort that responds to this terrible tragedy? And we have done this before, and it has been very important. These are some of our proudest moments, when we admitted hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese following that conflict, or we admitted tens of thousands of refugees from the Balkans following those conflicts. And often people who are fleeing these conflicts are very motivated, they are very grateful for the help, and they become outstanding new immigrant members of the societies where they end up, especially if they can never go home. And if you look at the Vietnamese population that came here, if you look at the Albanian or the Serbian populations that have come to the United States, the Bosnian immigrants, I think you'll find some of the most industrious and prosperous and patriotic communities in America. So we should do this. We should help the Syrian people. We should do our part. You know, I don't know what the magic number is on that, but we've got to do something. I mean, nobody can look at the images of the suffering that's occurring and not be moved by it.
Is it possible, Sean, that we may have messed up here, that we backed the wrong horse, that in insisting on Assad's removal, that we may have, he's a terrible man, but are we sure that the guys who are fighting to replace him aren't worse?
Well, it's hard to prove a counterfactual. I mean, I think what's clear is that our policy is a terrible failure, and we've seen the problem intensify and worsen, and it may yet get worse. And if you want to talk about President Obama's failure to enforce his own red line when Assad used chemical weapons, I think that's a very fair criticism of President Obama. You could also go back and look at the vacuum we created by invading Iraq in the first place and destabilizing the whole region. I think that's a valid core driver of this thing. But we are where we are, and I'm much less interested in the finger-pointing than in figuring out how we're going to move forward. And what's clear is that we have to do more to both fight ISIS and to bring some stability to Syria to stop this flow of migrants that has reached really just a catastrophic proportion, and which that means we've got to get our allies Turkey more involved. We've got to work better with the Kurds. We need much more effective, action on the ground in the areas where the instability is coming from, and we have to push back against the Russians, who are right now building a forward air base in Syria, flouting the efforts of the international community to remove Assad. We have to get a lot tougher, and we have to be prepared to do more.
Well, yeah, but you say you're not as interested in what happened as where we're going forward. Can you really go forward without understanding what happened?
No, of course not. Those who don't understand the past are certainly doomed to repeat it. But I do think you can understand the past without getting caught up in recrimination or this, baloney that goes on in Washington where the red team, the blue team are screaming at each other on Fox or MSNBC. I think that wastes time and creates bad feeling and just ties us in knots. You know, there should not be a big partisan divide when it comes to foreign policy. I mean, there has not been for much of American history. This is a recent phenomenon that's a carryover from this dumb notion we have that we should be fighting about everything instead of cooperating where we can and disagreeing where we must, but doing it respectfully. And in the area of foreign policy, if you're talking about a refugee crisis, if you're talking about a dictator killing his own people, if you're talking about, you know, this nihilistic extremist threat in the form of ISIS, you know, I don't know what the heck divides Republicans and Democrats on this. We ought to get together and as Americans, together with our allies, you know, develop an effective response and support each other on it instead of, you know, laying in the tall grass waiting to pounce first time somebody makes a decision and it doesn't go exactly right.
Now, we have this very politicized situation. We only have 3 minutes left. But my question to you is it really possible that this animus that exists, as you say, the reds and the blues screaming at each other, will lead to a government shutdown? Aren't we past that?
It's possible. You know, I'm sure working against it. I mean, right now there's some folks in the very conservative part of the Republican Party, because it certainly isn't all Republicans, but, you know, there's some of the Tea Party folks who have decided they should shut the government down over Planned Parenthood funding. That is just dumb, and it's short-sighted, and it's wrong, because, one, they're never going to get their way. They don't have the votes in the Senate, even if they do it in the House. And the president would certainly never go along with it, which means he'd veto it, which means the government shuts down. So rather than just looking at that and saying, gee, maybe we should go out and tell people about this in the next election or find things we can do and you know, work towards their goals, which they're certainly entitled to do, you know, they have this, you know, we're taking our ball and going home approach, and it's what really makes people angry about Washington. You know, I think at some point you have a responsibility to know when you don't have the votes, when you're in the minority, and you can't, you know, just... You can't just, you know, stomp and scream and shut things down, hoping that people will change their views. We've been down this road before. We know it doesn't work. So I hope they come to their senses. I'm certainly down there working on getting things done and on working together and on figuring out, you know, things we agree on rather than just, you know, playing this political game of what we disagree about. So I sure hope we don't do it, because real people will get hurt, and it will weaken our economic growth and all of the other things we're trying to accomplish right now.
I take it you wouldn't want to have John Boehner's job right now, the Republican speaker.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I'd do it if he won't. I mean, the point is, somebody should lead the House of Representatives. You know, if he'd like to lead it, you know, I think you'd see fewer people, you know, asking him to step down, including from his own party, mostly from his own party. You know, at some point, the speaker can't just sit back and let the inmates run the asylum here. He's got to bring some discipline to his own majority. He has more members than any Republican speaker has had, you know, I think, in our lifetimes. So it's not about having capacity. The guy's got 247 votes in the House of Representatives. You only need 218 to get anything done. So don't tell me you can't get 218, because you always get a few Democrats on a lot of issues, particularly when you're being reasonable. And he could run that place, and he ought to risk his own job to do it, because the country can't wait any longer for a good transportation and infrastructure bill. Our bridges are falling down. We need to invest in them. You know, the country can't wait to fix our busted immigration system. The votes are there in the House to do it. He should pass it or amend it or, you know, put his own imprimatur on it, but get it done. And we should be doing other things that are languishing while everybody sits around and waits for the next election thinking maybe they'll, you know, have some magic landslide, instead of, you know, getting what they can, reaching an honorable compromise and going forward. So Speaker needs to lead.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, Democrat of New York's 18th District, in office since 2013. Sean, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for giving us all this time.
Thanks, Alan.